Welcome to WFIU's Profiles. We're very honored to have with us their Royal Highnesses, Crown Prince Alexander of Yugoslavia and Serbia, and Her Royal Highness, the Princess Catherine. Prince Alexander, you've had ties with Indiana, I'm delighted to see, and you've had ties with America. In fact, I was especially pleased to see that you attended Culver. Was that a long experience or a short experience? Were you there for a while?
Well, it's a pleasure to be back here. Yes, Culver was a fantastic experience. It was for 1 year in 1959, just a few years ago, and I learned a lot. I was at a school in Switzerland, which was a very easygoing school called Le Rosay, and my father thought I needed more discipline, and he met a friend in Chicago, and so I was dispatched to Culver. I went to the summer school and the winter school, and I enjoyed it very, very much. Of course, since then, my wife and I have been back to Indiana a few times, and our connection to America is that I came to America for the first time in 1948, then school at Culver. And between us, our children are all born in America, and we both worked in America. So we have an incredible connection.
A great connection. You mentioned you came in 1948. You were, of course, born in London, and born in a very special way. You were born in Claridge's, which, as I read, Winston Churchill had declared Yugoslav territory.
That's absolutely right. The suite where I was born in, Suite 212, was turned into Yugoslav territory by Winston Churchill, and some earth was brought from Yugoslavia and put under the bed. We have since then, my wife and I had dinner in this beautiful suite. I think it's changed a lot, and I believe the bed has changed too. and Claridge's is very much like a home to us. We always give dinners there a couple or three times a year. And they're very, very good to us. It's become a tradition over the years to go back to Claridge's.
As we talk about the past, you also attended Gordonston, which is well known for being one of the most discipline-centered schools in the world.
Well, Gordonston's in Scotland, and in northern Scotland, and in a very nice area. What I did like about Gordonston was cruising on the west coast. The west coast of Scotland is absolutely gorgeous, and climbing in the Cairngorm Mountains. That's what I remember about Gordonston.
Princess Catherine, you've received a really great award because it reflects what you've been doing for several years now. You recently received the award that recognizes the kind of public service that you've been concerned with. I wonder if you might tell us a little more, because I've looked at the range of things. You've been dealing with people in need. You've been dealing with children. You've been dealing with senior citizens, refugees. Tell us, if you would, a little more about this.
Thank you.
Maybe a bit about the award you received in Indianapolis.
Thank you very much. Actually, it was my husband and I that we received them both together, because, of course, without my husband, I wouldn't have this incredible opportunity and this incredible privilege to be able to help the people in my country. And I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you very much for giving us a chance to explain a little bit about our life. First of all, I believe life is a mission, and we came to give, not to take. And I'm very happy that in our country, the people, this beautiful people, have received us so warmly in the last 6 years since 2001, when we moved into the palace in Belgrade. I have been appointed as the official coordinator for the health of the country, and I have been very involved with our hospitals as well as our orphanages and refugee camps. I really feel like a mother in my country. I believe that no one should suffer in this world, regardless of religion or ethnic origin. So this award has meant a lot to me, although I feel that this award really belongs to the people in our country that has given us the opportunity to help them. I believe that nobody can do anything alone. So coming here in Indiana, we find both of us an incredible sensitivity among the people. They seem to be givers. They seem to care. They seem to see our part of the world not being as far as some others feel it is. This planet is very small, and if we can contribute and make a difference, this is what life is all about.
And you've both received then the Ambassador for Children Peace Award.
Yes.
And the children are a particular focus, I assume, of your concern.
Yes, we are very grateful to Sally Brown, who gave us this opportunity to come and meet all these wonderful people and to receive this award. Ambassador for Children, I'm on their board, and we've been working together in making this world a better place to live. And as you know, Ambassador for Children is involved in many countries, and we're very grateful that they've included our country. But I must say to you that originally, when we came here, again, after my husband's days in Culver, in 2003, we came thanks to our dear friend, Crystal DeHaan.
Yes, indeed.
Crystal Houses, they've come to our country and they help our people. So we are very proud that we are included in Crystal Houses.
Wonderful.
With Crystal in the effort she's making to help children and their education.
You also have a foundation, of course, in Serbia.
Yes, we do. We have a foundation in Serbia called Princesa Katerina Foundation. And also I have a Lifeline Humanitarian Organization with offices in New York, in Chicago, in Toronto, London, Athens. And if anybody wants to look us up, it's www.lifelineaid.info. And this is a wonderful organization. We are very much involved in bringing medical equipment. We are very much involved in trying to do what we can for our hospitals in particular. Only one-third of our medical equipment work. One-third is over 30 years old, and one-third doesn't work at all. So we are really in great need for that, and we're trying to help it in the best way we can. Just to give you an example, in our children's hospital, for example, a big donor gave us 50 infusion pumps when the hospital only had 3, and 50 were not enough.
Really?
So that shows you. We also had the highest mortality of newborn babies in Europe because for nearly 10 years, the women did not want to have any children during the conflict. And later on, when they decided to start a family, they were older and they were not able to carry the baby through the 9 months. So unfortunately, a lot of premature babies came in the world, in our part of the world, and a lot of them didn't survive because we lacked incubators. So this has been a big campaign on our behalf, my husband and I, in trying to get incubators to save the babies.
And you've also been concerned about refugees, of course.
Refugees has been an incredible concern. 650,000 refugees. These are people who live in a tiny little room, the whole family, for the last 8 to 10 years, without really knowing what's the future for them. This is really not the way God wants us to live our lives. And this is in the middle of Europe. We're an hour from Germany, an hour from France, Italy. How can anybody live in a little room, the whole family, the grandparents, everybody, one on top of the other? And they have enormous needs, from clothes to shoes to any help you can imagine. Some of them don't have electricity even. Some of them have troubles even getting a shower. I really believe that these people need to be settled as soon as possible. Our country has been forgotten, unfortunately, and I believe that this isolation has not done any good to the people or to the conscience of the world.
I might add also for our listeners that you've had an American background attending 2 universities in this country.
Yes, I have. I was in Colorado and Texas, and I lived here. And as my husband said, all 5 children have been born here and 4 of our grandchildren. And one of our granddaughters is here at the
at
university.
Indiana University, which
absolutely.
We're delighted
about. We are thrilled because we
right.
don't want to ever lose the connection with Indiana. This is very close to our heart, and we are sure that very good things will come out of it.
Prince Alexander, it's a wonderful odyssey as I look over these years from 1991 to the present. In 1991, you and Princess Catherine traveled to Belgrade, and you were received by large numbers of people. What was the cause of the great excitement when you returned to Belgrade? What did the people look for? Why were they so eager to have you back?
After the collapse of the Berlin Wall and the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was hope in Yugoslavia for a better future for democracy and human rights. But unfortunately, our leaders used negative religion and negative nationalism. They were like chameleons. They were members of the League of Communists, but they changed their skin, their color. And there was hope that democracy would really install itself. We came there, my wife and myself and the 3 boys, because the Democratic opposition united. And that was a tough thing for them to unite. Politics were somewhat of a novelty because there was only one political party, the League of Communists, yes, in the past. And they united and appealed for us to come. So when we arrived, we were received by most of Belgrade. It was absolutely extraordinary, to the detriment of Milosevic, who was the dictator, more cunning dictator than any Central American republic. But it didn't last for very long. I went back to Belgrade, to Serbia the next year, and took part in demonstrations and went to the faculties of the universities and sat with the students, these brave young men and women, and supported them. But again, the whole regime lasted far longer.
Yes. But you returned in 92, 95, and then again in 2000.
Yes, we did. It was well established, the regime, and unfortunately there were sanctions imposed upon the country. There was a terrible conflict. Many people lost their lives. All sides were hurt. It was totally unnecessary to happen. Mm-hmm. It was a question of power for these leaders. And they used this power in the most appalling way. I would say it was a shocking divorce, the worst divorce you could ever imagine. Thank goodness this is all over. But there were things which really were not right. For example, the Dayton Accord was a treaty that was signed after the Wright-Patterson meeting in Ohio. But even after that was signed, the path to democracy, for example, in Serbia was very difficult because nobody wanted to ruffle, certainly in the United States, the feathers of President Clinton's hat. You see, there were demonstrations in Indonesia, in Jakarta, and the Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, said to the dictator there, "Your time's up." But we had elections, municipality elections in Serbia, shortly after the Dayton Accord. And Milosevic did not prepare himself to win. Basically, to put it bluntly, not enough dead people voted. So he canceled elections that the opposition had won. And they all went on the streets to demonstrate against this. And Madeleine Albright said to our guy, Milosevic, "Hey, you better behave yourself." So it wasn't for a few more years, not until October 2000, did we actually do the change.
Mm-hmm. Now, you returned and citizenship was returned to you and to the princess?
Yes, but to get to this return of citizenship, I was very active in working for democracy and human rights, initially by meeting Democratic leaders and introducing them to such entities as the State Department, the British Foreign Office, Quai d'Orsay in France. And this was a very good interchange. So I got to know all of them. All those people who are in power today, certainly since the 5th of October 2000, I've known them well. But really what culminated in the change were three major conferences. The first one I decided to do in Budapest.
Yes.
And this was a very important one where I summoned everybody using email. The phone system didn't work. Faxes didn't work. So you left a very short message by email and you'd hope they'd pick it up, which they did. So 98% of these personalities, these leaders, turned up in Budapest. And they worked very well together. They came to agreements and set up a basis for the future. Then I tried to do one in Bosnia, but unfortunately there it was somewhat problematic because Milosevic interfered with the border, so attendance was really not up to it. The best one, the final one, took place in Athens. And this was thanks to having been invited, my wife and I, to Jerusalem for the millennium. The Greek government had organized a very big do there. And the Greek government asked me if it would be possible to do one in Athens to try and galvanize this opposition. And I thought it would be possible if we get the security going, the location, and transportation. And we did that. And this was a superb conference. The United States was very interested with it, the European Union. And here the leaders went even further and came to some concrete agreements about the forthcoming elections in September 2000. This conference took place in April and was followed by another meeting at Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. But what they did was so important in networking that they won the elections. Again, here you have a case of winning elections, and Milosevic not being prepared again. He canceled the elections yet again. And this brought the people again onto the streets. But this time they were far more prepared and more cohesive, the political opposition. And the government, the regime, couldn't sustain it. So the 5th of October basically was the end of the Second World War for us. We were asked back, the president of the Federation, who was Koštunica at the time, asked us to come back, and we had an extraordinary meeting in the Federal Palace, and also with Đinđić, our prime minister of Serbia. But it wasn't until we came back in December 2000 that we went to visit the palaces for the first time. I tried to do that in 1992, but I was met at gunpoint. So it was an emotional moment for myself and my wife to see where my grandparents had lived, where my father had lived. And the government then afforded us negotiations on moving in. And we actually set ourselves up to move in on my birthday, the 17th of July, 2001. We've been living there since then. It'll be 6 years this July. An incredible experience for both of us and the boys.
You know, the question of healing is so important. As I look towards the past, there were terrible atrocities. There were terrible abuses. Communists, the period of Milosevic. Your lives now are in many ways devoted to unity and healing. And I wonder if maybe Princess Catherine would like to refer to that, and then if you would as well, Prince Alexander. Because how do you heal a nation?
Well, first of all, a nation after a conflict of over 10 years needs a father of the nation. And my husband managed to be the unifying factor. He's become the symbol of unity, stability, and continuity. And with this respect that the people have, he has been able to achieve very much. What the country needed was an example. What is a true leader? How does he have respect for everyone, regardless of religion or ethnic origin? And my husband has managed to be above politics, above religion. He's been there for the people, which is what the people needed. They needed the confidence to know that somebody cared, that somebody wanted to help them with jobs. My husband, whenever they mention to him monarchy, he always says, I want to crown democracy first. I want to crown jobs. We live in a world where there's money for war, but there's no money for peace. There's strategy for war, but there's no strategy for peace. So until we invest in peace, it's difficult to have peace. My husband has invested in peace in our country. They call him the King of Peace because he's brought goodwill towards everyone and respect for all our neighbors and all the people, that not only those who live in our lands, but those who live around. So although we have come to a country that has been war-torn, we have managed to survive. We have brought a lot of people in the palace to visit, because the palaces where we live, it used to be the forbidden city. And for nearly 50 years, only heads of state were allowed to come in, royal members of royal family. The last one who slept in our bed was 30 days before we arrived was Putin. President Putin. So we spent 6 months fixing the palaces up, and then we opened it to the people. My husband invited the entire government, all the mayors of every town in the country, all the directors of hospitals, universities, everything. We had more than 35,000 guests in 18 months. So he's managed to get the people to feel comfortable around him and confident that finally someone has come there who is working for them, who puts them first. And that's what the people needed. They needed to be put first, and they needed to know that somebody was there to help them with a good future for themselves and their children.
Prince Alexander, how do you see reconciliation and unity?
Very important. It was a tragedy what happened. This experiment which failed, communism, where you had an imperial and royal party, the Liga Communists. You cannot do that. You have to have democracy. Everybody has to take part. Free and fair elections, the respect of human rights. Then 10 years of utter madness and pain. There were no angels. There were people doing terrible things, as you just mentioned, to others. Yes, people have to pay a price for that. The Hague Tribunal may not be perfect, But we do have to respect our international obligations and send these people for trial. Having said that, I'd like to say that there have been dual standards after all. First of all, sanctions just reinforce the regime. And that is quite appalling because they don't know where to turn the people. The regime controls everything, all the airwaves, the whole life, makes people dependent upon them. Like today in Zimbabwe with Mugabe.
Exactly
the same thing. So I was very much against the sanctions. Then bombing. We had the misfortune to be bombed. Again, this rallied everybody around Milosevic. All of us who wanted democracy, we had to go back in the woods and start again, which was absolutely appalling. Then we had the prospect after our revolution and a bright future came, a broken country with hardly a few pennies in the central bank. We had to appeal for a donors conference. A donors conference was set, and we were told no donors conference unless you hand over Milosevic. Djindjic bravely took this in his hands and handed over Milosevic to the Hague Tribunal. Kosturica, the president of the Federation, believed that there should be a trial process in the country and see later what would happen. And their relationship broke up. But when it came to Afghanistan, and of course the horror of 9/11 and moving troops into Afghanistan and trying to create a better situation there and go after Al-Qaeda and Taliban, there was no request for handing over any Taliban leaders or Al-Qaeda leaders before the Tokyo conference. And then let's move on to Iraq. There was no request to hand over the pack of cards, which we all heard of, this kind of comic book joke of very dangerous people. Yet maybe a trillion or so went into the country. When it came to us, yes, we were bombed. Yes, many people didn't behave badly, but we did not get a windfall, shall we say. We're very grateful to the United States and USAID, very grateful. We're grateful we have superlative diplomatic relations. We're grateful for European Union aid, and it's very nice. But we also are very worried that we've been told until we hand over one more leader, and that's General Mladic, to the Hague Tribunal, we could not go forth with the negotiations to enter into the European Union. Now, I think this is wrong. Yes, he should go to the Hague Tribunal. Yes, he should be a man and defend himself and probably get better medical treatment. But I don't think you can isolate or you can ransom 9 million people because of one bad egg. I don't think that's right. I think we have to move Serbia forward into the European Union. We've had two neighboring countries just join, Romania and Bulgaria, and there were some more that joined within the region before, Hungary, and of course Slovenia, who was a component of Yugoslavia. So I do hope some common sense hits the leaders of the West who are doing this, and we can contribute very well for stability in the region. There is a saying, there will not be peace in the region until Serbia is at peace with itself.
And that's a remarkable statement. I'd like to follow up on two of your ideas, if I may. One is the idea of the union. We might start with that. Do you believe that Serbia is poised and ready to meet the conditions of entering the European Union?
It's difficult with the heritage that we've had and the losses, not only the pain, the human pain. And, of course, we're very sorry for all the pain that everybody else has suffered. But to try and go forth with the reforms and come into line with the requirements that the European Union require is a very tough one. I think we can do it. We are, after all, at a very strategic cross point in Europe. And there's no doubt that our neighbors, and we value our neighbors, and our friendship with the former republics of Yugoslavia is getting better and better literally every day. I believe we can do it. As soon as the European Union, and also with the blessing of the United States, says, let's go ahead with further discussions, not only European Union, but also further relations, I think it'll go high speed. But we, on our side, have to get together our politicians, and our politicians must work for the common good of the country and put their constituents first. we do have a situation where there's a lot of competition, a lot of jealousies between our politicians. I know them all, and they're very good friends, but I'm appealing to them to work, as the European Union does, as the citizens do, to work together. We had elections on the 21st of January this year, and up until today, we still have our caretaker government, and the new coalition has not been formed. There was no outright winner, so the democratic parties were supposed to form a government. We have until the 15th of May to do that. Then there's a prospect of going into elections again. I think this is very serious because it sends a wrong signal to foreign investment. And my goodness, do we need foreign investment? We're lucky to have had some good investment. The United States has invested with the flagship of U.S. Steel, and we're very grateful for them. But we need far more. So we've got to bring that signal across. And the people cannot wait anymore. We also have to improve our social services. My wife can tell you the tragedy of our hospitals. We have talent there, but we need equipment. We need training. There are a million things to do to make the country work better and to be a better neighbor.
You're both above politics, though. But yes. You are in politics, if I might use the...
You're very well said. Well... we're both above politics. I was very political before the 5th of October 2000. And as my wife said, I'm the symbol of unity and continuity and stability. So when we came back to live back home, I decided to switch off the political rhetoric. But once in a while, I do come out with yes. something. I exercise my freedom of speech, shall we say.
Yes. But I'm very proud of my husband's educational fund. He's created this amazing career center, and you probably want to tell them a little more about this.
Well, thank you.
Because he loves the youth, and he believes, after all, that the young people are our future, and the young people depend on him, and he's doing some wonderful things for them.
Well, it's very opportune to mention this here at Indiana University. This foundation, the purpose of it is to help our young men and women obtain scholarships and go abroad and complete their masters and get an incredible experience of going abroad. We had a brain drain during the sanction years. We lost 250,000 of our cream. And now we have to create this intellectual base again, the future technicians, shall we say, of the country. But to do that, we need scholarships. We need to network with the universities abroad. And it was thanks to actually Crystal Dehaene here, who lives in Indianapolis, who introduced us to Sir Colin Campbell, who is the Deputy Chancellor of the University of Nottingham in the United Kingdom. This incredible gentleman came to Belgrade with a whole team from his very fine university, and we obtained 40 scholarships. We're now looking for more scholarships. We have only a handful in the United States, and it's so important to get a few more. But having said that, my wife mentioned about a career center. Very important. Here in the United States, we're talking now from Indiana University, there's a career center here, which is the most normal thing to have in a university. This was virtually unknown in our country. So I founded a career center at Belgrade University. There's some 80,000 students there, and it's doing very well. We got the training, actually, from Nottingham University, and we're very happy to have done that. This year, we'll open three more centers in the other universities, in Niš, Kragujevac, and Novi Sad. But also, there was an agreement signed with the Chamber of Commerce of Serbia to get them working together, and the databases are filling up, and there's more interaction and with the students and business, and also how do you write a CV, what do you do during an interview. All these things were virtually unknown, and we're very happy that we were able to get that going. But we definitely need scholarships, please.
And also training in technology.
Technology is vital. We're lucky to have pretty technical men and women, and I think if they were given the opportunity, the facilities, our technology would move ahead. We're also a country looking forward to technological investment. We can do very well. The salary base is low. The location is very central. A great opportunity for technical investments.
And I think the world is going to be divided between countries that have the technology
and that don't. And I think if Serbia is to become a world player, it has to be part of the technological revolution.
Absolutely. We must be part of it, and we must definitely include our technological base. But also we must introduce the basis, the backbone of any country's economy, and that is entrepreneurship. Exactly. We were a command economy. The state owned all these corporations, and they were privatizing them after the revolution shortly, and that's not quite yet over. But if we could really get the notion of entrepreneurship through to our people and get them more involved in this, and also get the financial community much more in touch with the needs, I think our business would increase dramatically. We also need, apart from buying factories or corporations, whatever it is, we need greenfield investment. Yeah. Very important that we have some new type of investments.
We have also become the banking center because we have many, many banks from Austria, from Greece, from Italy, from France that are settled in Belgrade and throughout Serbia. So we are very, very grateful for that as well. It's very important that that everyone has a chance. When I go to a hospital and I see the newborn babies being born, I look at them thinking, will they suffer? Will they struggle as they grow into going to the university, finding a job? You know, so I think to myself, okay, they're still young. Maybe if we continue working hard, maybe as they grow, they will find it easier than those who have already now going through schools. My husband also in June, every year since we've been there, the top graduate of every high school in the country, 512 high schools, come to the palace with their parents, and my husband, together with the Minister of Education, give them an award. This is an incredibly emotional experience because those young people come, they're very proud, they have managed to be the top of their class. The competition in the classrooms in the last 5 years has been enormous. Who will come to the palace and get awarded by my husband? And the minister, they give them a lovely gift of a leather bag, a pen, books, and all that. But what is our aim is that someday we can get enough scholarships to be able to give to the young people. Because it's very, very sad when they come to the palace and some of them said to us, you know, I've been accepted by this university or that university in the United States or whatever. But of course, I will only frame the acceptance in a lovely frame because that's all I can do. I can never go there. It's very, very sad, very, very sad. And we want to also help our orphans. I feel that they are young and bright, but they are very unfortunate. They've lost their family, their loved ones, brothers, sisters, parents, and I feel very sad for them. They need to be recognized. And just if I may take 1 minute to tell you a story of a young little child in an orphanage. And when I went to visit, he asked me to come to his room. And he lifted up a pillow and there was a candy bar there. I said to him, I thought I gave you this candy bar when I was here a few months ago. He says, you did. But that was the best day of my life when he came to visit me. And I don't want to eat it. This brings tears in my eyes because that shows me how important it is to make a difference in the life of the children in my country. We also have created through my foundation an SOS chat line for children who need to talk to someone, abused children, suicidal children. And I'm very sad to say that this 800 line, which is the first time we ever had it in our country, we had more than 10,000 phone calls from children throughout the whole country. So, you know, all this destruction, all these years, has distracted also the children's lives. And this is why we try to bring some continuity and tranquility in their lives.
I've spoken with Crystal Dehaene, who has very generously opened schools all over the world, including one in Serbia.
Yes.
And I think what you're talking about now is what Crystal is also trying to achieve, the ripple effect, because if you change children's lives,
yes,
you're changing the future.
Absolutely.
And this is laudable, the kind of work that you're doing. If I might shift, Prince Alexander, there's been a Montenegrin change. You have an opinion on the significance of this referendum that took place?
Well, it was very sad that we lost brothers and sisters in Montenegro, now an independent country with great hopes to move into the European Union, just like Serbia, great hopes to receive investments to move ahead and continue reforms. I think it was a very, very sad moment and a moment to reflect upon how important it is. This includes the United States, where you have 50 states, how relationships must be worked upon, nourished, contacts must be done, and everybody must work together. Of course, this referendum did take place, and we have no option but to respect it. And all I can say, and many of us in Serbia say the same thing, is to wish Montenegro a great future, but we still will have to work together as partners within the European Union, and this is what will bring us together also with the former components of Yugoslavia. The European Union will be a unifying factor for the common good of Europe.
And I think we see this as perhaps another hope for the future.
You are so right, absolutely.
And you are so committed to democracy that if the choice was made, it's something that one
very
accepts.
Committed to democracy, but also I must insist that we have to encompass and embrace everybody in our country. Yes. We have to embrace those who are part of the past, who may feel part of the past, and that is all these sides that were taken. We need to be one country working together for the common good and let the ballot box decide how we move forward politically, which avenue we go. But one thing we cannot afford is any more experiments with extremism. Extremism is a thing of the past. What we need now is good democracy, and most certainly, as everybody I think has noticed, a market economy. Market economy will fund our social services programs. This is the case within the European Union. I can give you the case of the United Kingdom, where the national health is funded by the taxation, an economy which changed very much in the last 20 or so years, spectacularly, in that also the Labour government adopted this and even perfected it in many ways. And this is the case in Europe. I don't think the days of fundamental socialism exist anymore. Yes, there's a socialism for the good of the people, and this is respected very, very much. But we cannot afford any experiments where you do not have this opportunity for people to move forward. There's a booming economy in the United Kingdom. Yes, unfortunately, the pound is almighty at the moment, and I'm sorry about the American tourist going there. I think the Brits coming here to the United States are delighted to spend money here. But we have a lot to learn from these economic ways forward. We are a market economy in Serbia. And I think this is the basis. We've skipped certain things that have not yet happened in the Frances and Germanys. So now we're appealing for investors. But we also have to go out and get the investors. Yes. We have to do a roadshow. We have to work on our image better. We have to work in public relations.
You know, it's very moving for me to watch my husband. He promised his father before he died that he will always be close to the people. His father always told him, yes, we are in exile, but only physically, not mentally. And he was always very, very close to the people. And, of course, his father, he is the only king buried in America, in Libertyville, yes, Illinois. And it's very moving to see how my husband is following on his father's footsteps and how eager he is to help the people, how he finds it his destiny to help. And there's nothing more that he wants to see than the people in our country getting on their feet and get on with life, which is the way it should be.
I want to ask about King Peter II. There is an intention on your part to repatriate the remains of the king. I believe that you think this would be a symbolic but also an appropriate gesture.
Yes. Unfortunately, my father died in exile. He was very sick, homesick the whole of his life. And he was not in good health. And he was buried in Libertyville in the United States, a country that he deeply respected and also loved. But this is really a temporary solution. He was a head of state. He came from Serbia. He was born in Belgrade. And we have a mausoleum not too far away, about 50 minutes outside Belgrade, where his grandfather is buried, King Peter I, the founder of the dynasty, and his father, King Alexander. And that's where he always wished to be buried. Libertyville is very symbolic, but even more symbolic is Oplanac. Oplanac, this beautiful mausoleum, where every Serb knows about it, and foreign visitors who come go and have a look, and they're in total awe of what they see. This can be done, and I think we should look at it maybe as 2008. But also we have Queen Maria, my grandmother, my father's mother, who is buried in Frogmore in Windsor, next to Windsor Castle, in the area where Queen Victoria is buried. And the idea is to bring her to put her next to her husband, King Alexander I, and also to bring my mother back. And there are other members of the family, too, who must come home. But I look at it in this way, too. You have American heroes who lost their lives abroad. They come home, and many of them are buried in Arlington Cemetery. So there is somewhat of a parallel here.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my husband's father died at 47 years old from a broken heart. And it's very, very sad. And I'm glad that he's also bringing his mother to Serbia. His mother is in the country where I was born, which is Greece. She's now buried at the palace, royal palace in Greece, because my husband's grandfather was a king of Greece.
Yes.
And so it's wonderful to see his mother coming to be next to her beloved husband,
Absolutely.
King Peter.
Yeah. Let me end by asking about the future, the family future. Your sons are part of this transition, and I assume are deeply committed to remaining involved in the life of the country. And do you believe they will continue your tradition?
Yes. We both had to earn our living, Catherine and I, and we believe that Peter, Philip, and Alexander have to do the same. And they're very well educated. They went to universities in America, in the United Kingdom. They all have jobs, including one who's doing a master's in California now. And they come back for vacations to Belgrade, and they bring friends. And the friends are totally amazed at what they see there. And they're our ambassadors now who talk about the beauty of the country. Yes, they're involved. They know the history. But we would like them to see how it's important to pay for their apartment, for the electricity, gas bill, and all these things that everybody else is struggling to do, shall we say, in some instances. We have the task to try and settle things a bit better. We have the task also to move the constitutional monarchy process forward. There is a tremendous interest, considering that there hasn't been monarchy for many years, many decades. We've done polling, and we find extraordinary results, which go somewhat like one-third are totally in favor. One-third have no objection but would like to know more. And this is exactly what we're doing in trying to explain and have people go to local and TV stations and have call-ins, debates, and we have votes, and every time they have won these votes. And there's been some really interesting debates. The other third is somewhat against, but I don't find it a very strong fundamental against. These are days of mending. It's only 6 years and a few months since the end of this historical period, which I think set the country back so much. Now we have freedom of the media, freedom of expression. I believe that if we increase our job base, there will be even more interest, because you cannot have a constant competition between president and prime minister. We have a lot of bickering going on there, and people are fed up with it. We should have a head of state, like in the United Kingdom, Japan, Canada, for example, Spain, and so on. Spain is a very good example, who is neutral, who respects everybody, and allow the government, of course, is elected by the people, and the prime minister to run the show, to rule without interference. And either today's president Tadic becomes a prime minister, or Prime Minister Koštunica continues, or somebody else comes on the scene. And we've spoken quite often amongst ourselves with these two very nice individuals about it. And there's been no violent objection. But, you know, politicians are new at the game. We don't have professional politicians. These two gentlemen are really intellectuals and first-class intellectuals. They were not brought up in the political arena. They're learning politics at an incredible speed. And, of course, we're watching abroad all the politics, which are quite hot. I'd say in some cases hotter than Serbia.
And there's no need for referendum.
Yeah, my wife is right. We've seen in the past referendums take place like the one in Greece. We have a historical example at the turn of the 20th century, I'm so sorry. My grandfather was brought back by a constitutional assembly where the parliament decided it was in the best interest to recall him, and he became King Peter I. And this was a golden moment in our history. A referendum is a difficult one where I would have to take a political position in competition against those who are against it, when in fact my role is to unite everybody and not take sides. The unions came to see me, and this is a fascinating request. All the unions came and they asked me to be a candidate for president. I thanked them very much, and I said, I believe my role in coming back here is to unite you and not to divide you.
Well, it's been wonderful to have you with us. I hope you'll come back when Stephanie, your granddaughter, graduates.
And well, we certainly look forward to that.
That'll be a wonderful day for you.
We do, very much.
We have two other children, David and Allison, and Stephanie is was brought into this world by our daughter Allison, the only girl out of our five children. And so she's so happy here, and we're so happy she chose this school. And we certainly look forward to come and for her graduation, and hopefully even before that, because
that
she has
be
two
wonderful.
More years to go.
But, may I say that we have a website also for
yes.
visitors, if I could. Our website is www.royalfamilyallinone.org. And there's also a location where you can email and pass on your comments. We'd love it if you take a moment to visit this website. Thank you.
Well, I urge our listeners to do so.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Princess Catherine, Prince Alexander, this has been a wonderful interview. We thank you for coming. This is Patrick O'Mara, and the program has been WFIU's Profiles.
The program you just heard was recorded in April of 2007. The studio engineer and technical producer was Michael Paskash. Emily McCord was our research assistant. Copies of this or other programs can be obtained by calling 812-855-1357. More information about Profiles, including archives of past shows, can be found on our website at wfiu.org. Profiles is a production of WFIU and comes from the studios at Indiana University. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. Please join us again for the next edition of Profiles. For WFIU, thanks for listening.